A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Do you just want to make this episode a practice interview?
A practice interview?
Yeah. Don't you have an interview coming up for
on Tuesday, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, nice.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with the guys at Obstructed View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and enjoy talking baseball and, of course, the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Good day, this is Ken. With me are Adam and Jeff of Obstructive View. How's everybody doing?
Doing great.
Loving life.
Awesome. Well, we did talk about this before I officially started this thing, but I do have a pot. We're doing a podcast now, but on Tuesday, I will have an interview, and it's very interesting that they do that. Well, it's Thanksgiving week, so if you have an interview on, like, basically 2 days before the holiday, maybe that's a good sign. So I hope that is a good sign. I'll be meeting with what I presume is the CEO and the chief scientific officer. So I think, given all the rounds that I've gone through, this is as good as it's going to get until after the holiday. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
I think it means you're one of the top free agents out there.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to pay me Juan Soto money, but, I would settle for being able to pay rent and feeding.
The no deal, Burns.
they could knock 2 zeros off of that Juan Soto number and you'll take it, you guess, right?
Yeah. Are we talking about the aggregate where he gets like the $1 billion or are we talking about...
I will take what he pays in state taxes for a week.
Wow. Yeah, it's going to make a lot. I think this is just going to be kind of a free for all because it is the holidays. I'm just, kind of sweating it because unfortunately, being unemployed means no income or very little because unemployment doesn't pay you that much. So got to get that job soon. And it's kind of annoying, right? Because first of all, there are all the jobs that you apply for. And then 90% of them say reject it because you don't have like the 17 years of experience. And then you're just like, yo, how am I supposed to get an experience if you don't hire me, you know? And then...
That's a pretty incredible response rate if 90% of them are even bothering to respond at all.
Right. and then you're right. Like most of them just ghost you. So you don't know whether they threw your resume into the proverbial fire or if they're just like not even bothering or if they're considering you, but then someone forgot. Because I've had jobs where I apply for them in like August. And I just barely last week got rejection letters and it was like, wow, it took you that long to realize that not useful. And then there's those jobs where you're like, okay, we don't think you're the right fit, but then it stays on their job site for like weeks on end. And so I just hammer the HR person and say, hey, you haven't filled that job yet. Maybe give me another chance. But yeah, it's annoying with between all the rejections and the ghosting and everything else. It's just been a slog, but this is a good sign. So we're hoping for the best here.
Yes. Yes. I have had a similar experience and I realized I'm just not Hooters material, and I gave up my dream.
Yeah, I mean, you got to fill in those short shorts pretty well, right?
Well, would be subjective.
All right,
I'm gonna leave that alone. Just leave it there.
Well, speaking of balls, we are a baseball po podcast, and I guess right before the Thanksgiving holiday, it sounds like Juan Soto is going to get some offers this week, and we can talk a little bit about that. The previous week, there were a bunch of awards announced, and we can do kind of a postmortem on that as well. I don't know if you guys have kept in touch with the grapevine, but there are both a Cubs social media thing and also a Ken Rosenthal thing at this point, but there might be some prominent Cubs on the trade block if something matches up. So we can talk about all that stuff. How's that for a plan, gentlemen?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds great.
I'm game.
As the spring gave way to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrows.
I forgot, Adam, like last time did we were we recording right before Ian Happ won the Gold Glove or after? I just lost track of time.
I don't know. I think he won. I think we knew he won.
Okay. Yeah, because Dansby was a finalist, but he didn't win, and I thought that was kind of a travesty. But you know, he had won two gold gloves in a row, and I guess people don't like repeats unless it's Ichiro, and it's just so good that just like, yeah, we'll just give it to you again. But yeah, that was really nice. I think Seiya Suzuki was a Silver Slugger finalist in the outfield, but either he didn't play enough outfield because at towards the end of the season he was mostly the DH and Cody Bellinger was playing right field, or you know the Cubs essentially did not make the playoffs and that kind of penalizes you in that way. So that was unfortunate. The only other Cub that seemed to get a lot of recognition in the finalist list was Shota Imanaga, and he was not a Rookie of the Year finalist, but he was actually fourth in the voting, which was really cool. He got some third place votes, but finished behind Jackson Chourio. And then I think he made the All MLB second team, which was really cool. So there was a lot of praise for Shota there, even though he didn't actually win the award. And I think maybe yeah, you guys might have to help me out here, or we can do a quick Google, but he might have won, or it's either the MLB pre-arb player pool, which I don't know if he's eligible for, or the actual contract structure that he signed that had all those like millions of different permutations of opt-outs. He essentially won himself extra money over the course of his contract by finishing fifth in the Cy Young voting. So that was really cool. So there's talent on this team that was sort of kind of down ballot recognized, and that's kind of encouraging going forward.
Oh yeah, Shota is a bright light of encouragement as far as the future of the pitching staff. Definitely a good sign, fun element to add to the roster. A lot of fun to watch. Didn't he like perform some version of Go Cubs Go? Like, I don't know if it was techno or grunge or whatever, because I can't remember if I actually ever heard the sound, because I kept seeing the video in times when I wasn't able to turn on the audio, but I just remember it looking hilarious and awesome. Hilarious, awesome.
He might have done that at the award show. That might be the video you're talking about. I know he did a version of that in his intro conference, and then he did like a bear down at a Bears game. But the most recent one, he was at the award show, and I think he sang "Go Cubs Go." It didn't sound techno though. It sounded I guess traditional. But your mileage may vary.
Either way, good to see him get some recognition, and would like to see that excitement carry over into next year, along with the other big signings that are certainly going to happen.
You
Really?
would hope so. I think we talked about it last week, or last time we recorded. So the Cubs have like an interesting wrinkle because they are starting the season in Japan about a week and a half early. I guess just a week, not a week and a half. But essentially, they need a certain team put together by March 17th or so, that's St. Patrick's Day, because on the 18th and 19th, they're playing in Tokyo against the defending World Series champion, the Dodgers. Then, 8 days later, they're going to open on the 27th against the Diamondbacks in Arizona. So there's a potential that whatever team they cobble together for the Tokyo series, it will change. Probably not very significantly, but there is a chance that it will change by the time they go to Arizona a week later. So that's kind of a very interesting wrinkle, particularly because of, all the different ways that they could potentially assemble this team. One of the things that I've been hearing through the grapevine is that, like, last season, which ended in October, right, for us, but essentially the
Technically.
2024 season, they went over the luxury tax. Now, if the deadline hasn't passed for them to calculate the luxury tax numbers and the Cody opt-in actually helped them get back under that, this shouldn't matter, but it seems like they don't want to trigger the tax next year. And based on kind of, the trade winds and all that, I don't think they want to trigger the tax in 2025, which means they're going to spend, especially with Cody opting in, less than the $50 million that they have before they hit that cap. So that kind of restricts you a little bit, right? The second thing is with Nico Hoerner injured, and basically he had a version of Tommy John that wasn't Tommy John, so who knows how he's going to recover because this is essentially without precedent, right? But if he does recover, is he a candidate to be traded because he's the one with a relatively team-friendly contract and value with both the defense and the base running and the bat. Trading.
I'll cut that off. I don't understand every time someone injured gets put on the trade rumor block. I don't understand what return anybody would ever hope to get or what reasoning there would be for another team to engage and like, hey, can you give us your injured player we hope gets better at some point? Like, what world are we in where other teams are looking for injured players to add to their roster?
Aside from Cubs and bullpen arms.
No, you make a very good point because it just doesn't make sense, right? But
You have a
in that.
team-friendly contract and you have, which is a nice thing if you want to get rid of somebody, but you're dealing someone at the nadir of their value, and it blows my mind why you would trade low on someone like Nico, who you're getting at a reasonable value if he plays again. But why would you unload someone when it's uncertain how they're going to contribute, when they're going to be back, how long it's going to take for them to get, like, as long as you have that protection of, well, he might go on the what I forget their no longer
IR.
permanent disabled list. Yeah, the IR. What's leave him there. Like, there's n very little aside from these silly marginal tax cap calculus deals. There's no reason to trade him. I think it's absolutely ridiculous to even entertain the idea, and I don't see any possibility where he gets dealt before he's healthy.
Well, on top of that, I totally forgot that he had surgery And even then, I still thought it was totally ridiculous that he was being brought up in trade rumors.
So for all the reasons that we just talked about, it makes no sense unless they're doing essentially a Theo era no more trade with someone who isn't quite Nomar, but has established himself as a pretty capable big leaguer. And the idea behind the trade, it especially in a lame duck year for Jed Hoyer, right? Like, he has to make the playoffs. I'm pretty sure of that. I know that we've got to bandy that around, but I'm pretty sure if no playoffs, then no more Jed, which is probably okay for us. But I feel like he's done a pretty good job up to this point, but you got to make the playoffs. You just got to.
I think that is a if I were a Ricket a speculation, because I don't have any evidence or any reason to believe that the Rickets are that desperate for the Cubs to see the postseason. I think money's still good, and I think they're fine with it.
But playoffs mean more money. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that, like, you have a team that's almost there. Let's get them there. And trying to move backwards by trading Nico and then trying to backfill with, like, maybe a Matt Shaw who's been going nuts in that Premier 12 tournament. Maybe that works, but you're putting a lot of eggs into one basket, whereas you have someone who's already established who should be able to play pretty well and has been an above average contributor for a few years now. So it's like, what are you doing? So I kind of agree with you guys there. Like, why are we trading Nico? But we're just saying that because those rumors are out there, and it does. For me, it doesn't make sense. It's like you want to keep him because he's a cornerstone of the offense, especially if you're not going to go after Juan Soto, right? Like, if you're not going to get a big bet by trade or by just throwing gobs of money at them, you have to leverage your pitching and your defense. And if you're subtracting from that defense, then what are you doing, right? I guess we can move on to the big rumor. I like it's been bandied around for a while, especially after Cody Bellinger opted in and Ken Rosenthal apparently wrote something about this, but it sounds like the Cubs actually want to trade Cody Bellinger. And if that's the case, then it doesn't make sense for them to have non-tendered Mike Tauchman. But that's what they did. They ended up doing that. They also got rid of Cubs legend Nick Madrigal, but that's another story. But the idea behind trading or getting rid of Mike Tauchman, now you don't have that backup outfielder, which means you have to rely on guys on the 40 man like Canario or Alcantara, right? So it's like, I think at that point, if you're trading your established backup outfielder who can get on base and plays pretty decent defense, now you're essentially like accepting that you are going to keep Cody Bellinger. And I don't think that trade is realistic anyway.
Oh, you don't think it's realistic that they would trade Bellinger?
I don't think it's possible. They'd have to eat a lot of money, and I don't think they're going to get a lot back if they tried to do something like that. It just doesn't make sense to me, both
Yeah,
financially and baseball wise.
I have no idea what his market would be, so it's kind of hard to judge. He's kind of a weird player.
Because if you consider his last 2 years as a Cub, he was 4 wins in 2023 when he won the Comeback Player of the Year. And then he got the qualifying offer and re-signed with the Cubs. And then everybody thought, okay, he's a 2-win player. He was injured. He did pretty well, but not to a like 25 plus million dollar man standards. But you all thought he was going to opt out, and he did not. So at this point, if you trade a Cody Bellinger, I think you're getting pennies on the dollar, and you're not getting that much salary relief anyway.
I just think it depends. I can see somebody trading for him if they want a lefty bat. And if the Cubs, I don't think the Cubs would have to eat that much of the contract. It's a 1 year contract. It's not like he's, 38 or anything. You have a decent idea of what you're getting from him defensively. He's versatile, shown that he can play first base and left field, center, right field, wherever. I don't know who would be in the market for him, but if somebody wanted just a temporary upgrade, get a left-handed bat in the lineup, I can see somebody going for him. It might not, and it could be get rid of, it would, I imagine either the Cubs would have to take on a contract of similar size, somewhat comparable size, or eat some of it, but it's not like it would just be a totally throw him away. And I wasn't all that surprised that Cody took his, exercised his option because he didn't have a very good year last year. So based on last year's stats, he had to imagine that the money he was going to make from this contract with the Cubs was going to be more than what he was going to get in a 1 year free agent deal, and it certainly wasn't going to secure him a multi-year big deal that he may or may not have been looking for. Write it off to injuries, but it's 1 year deal on a guy who's still a valuable bat in the lineup, good speed, solid defense. I can see somebody going for it, and I can see the Cubs pushing relatively hard for it. The Talkman deal was a little bit of a surprise, but maybe they will be going for some free agent outfielder to go along with, whoever they might have coming through the pipeline. But it definitely is like Bellinger and Talkman. They were solid guys. They've been good contributors for the Cubs, but not irreplaceable. And if you are looking to upgrade in the outfield, it certainly makes sense to add someone. If they are looking to add someone who has the potential to be like a four war guy, or if they are looking at having, say, a play a little bit more in the outfield than he did last year. And obviously they are going all in on PCA as the everyday center fielder. So
As they should. He's fun to watch.
yes.
So I got a question to ask you guys. So it's not just a 1 year contract, it's 1 year plus a player option. So it's a 1 plus 1. So does that shift to the new team or does that go away? Because I was not aware of whether trading a contract nullifies any subsequent options. So
I
that's
think
the.
it goes to the new team unless there's some specific trade kicker, whatever you want to call it, of the contract that voids it. But this, as far as I know, the new team would be subject to that option.
Because I think, if you keep Belly, like he can play all three outfield positions, he can play first base, he can DH, and he is basically a kind of insurance against tough lefties for the PCA and for Michael Busch, right? So it seems like, he's opted in, and trading him after he said all that stuff about how awesome Chicago is seems kind of like a dick move. So just keep him. And he can be pretty useful. That's just kind of my initial opinion is like, don't even explore a trade. You still have $50 million ish to play with. Buy a few pitchers. Get another catcher who isn't the guy they picked up in Matt. Is it Thais? Yeah. And
Not
anyway,
even going to learn to pronounce it.
yeah. I don't. I feel like because they split contracted him that like they're trying to find someone else and put him as the first man up if somebody breaks. And, Moises Ballesteros is probably not completely ready yet, even though he hit the tar out of the ball in the Fall League. So, are you going to rely on Ballesteros to play catcher, to basically be the primary catcher and Miguel Amaya as the backup? Or are you going to get someone else and shift everybody down and give Mo Baller a little bit more time to just continue tearing the cover off the ball, right? So, again, with the fact that this defense is so solid and the pitching itself is already solid, get more pitching, shift like the kind of fringy guys to the bottom of the bullpen pecking order, get some better relievers, like just more pitching. And the pitching in front of that defense should be able to prevent enough runs. And I was just looking at the stats today, the Cubs finished 12th in all of MLB in offense by runs per game. So it's like this offense can't already score runs. So if these guys don't have the month and a half long slump and they continue to progress, everything, it has the makings of a very solid team. And I feel like you don't want them to stand pat completely, but it's kind of okay if they do, even if we're kind of going to be disappointed about it.
Yeah, I'm mostly okay with position players. Aside from catcher, obviously, where they need to get something more than a warm body there. But that's also the kind of weird situation where, maybe aside from Dansby, it's all a bunch of like 2 to 3 WAR guys, so it makes it a little tougher to replace because the guys there are all good but not necessarily great. So kind of a weird situation. So I'd rather they just focus on the pitching and keep what they got. I also wouldn't be surprised if Talkman comes back also. Maybe that's just totally like without evidence wish casting, but he seems like a good fit vibe wise for the team.
He seemed, it's obviously not quite Schwarber category as far as the level of hope you had for him, but I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of teams interested in signing him.
Yeah, he's only good for like a month, but that month where he's good is, when he's filling in for someone, it's always great. But like
Yeah.
then they keep riding it for like another 2 weeks, and he's hitting like a buck 25, and it's not as much fun.
Yeah, I
But
would just
he's like the
expect
perfect fourth outfielder. You just gotta treat him that way.
just I don't know if toolsy hitter is a thing, but that's the word that comes to mind is just a guy who can fill in a certain role that you would want in the, just that pesky, annoying, good with two strike hitter. Yeah, you're not going to live or die based on his production, but not a guy I expect to go without a team for too much longer. And he could be back with the Cubs. It would be weird though, as I if there's some, condition, is something in his contract or in his status with regarding arbitration that they may have wanted to avoid kicking in or something. I have no idea why they wouldn't have been able to just figure out a contract for him. But yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. Haven't seen any type of explanation that really makes sense, but here we are. I'm used to things not making sense with this team every now and again.
But as it stands now, you get basically half the three regular outfielders, the DH, and the first baseman with which you can rotate those five guys and keep them fresh. And everybody's happy. Everybody gets like 500, 600 plate appearances. and like let's see how the matchups go. But yeah, it's I think to answer your question, the moment he's non-tendered, he becomes a free agent. Arbitration goes out the window for that season because there's no reason to offer him arbitration. You just sign him to a straight contract. That doesn't mean he's out of arbitration eligibility because the service time still keeps ticking until he hits the 6 years, and then he becomes a full free agent and arbitration no longer matters, right? So yeah, for this offseason only, he basically signs whatever contract someone wants to give him, and they don't have to haggle about it in a court in front of an arbiter or anything.
Sounds good.
So one thing that I also saw is that they are apparently not going after the big pitchers. So the big ones obviously are Corbin Burns and Max Fried. And so Burns, not too keen on because he's going to cost a lot. But Fried probably won't cost as much and is potentially better. I don't know. He's been hurt in the past, but like when he's healthy, he's pretty darn good, right? So once you pass those guys, now you have a few QO guys. I think a couple of them off already. No, one of them, except the QO, that was Nick Martinez. And then Pivetta did not accept the QO. There was a couple other ones. I think Severino was one, which I'm just like, nah. Minaya also, if he hadn't received the QO, you'd kind of like be interested, but now that he has, are you guys basically, what is your opinion of what kind of pitcher the Cubs should be looking to get if they're out on Burns and Fried? Keeping
I
in mind that
mean,
yeah, trades are good too.
it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence if they're like, oh, well, yeah, we're not really pursuing. You can say big name pitchers, but it also means they're not pursuing the really good pitchers, which just that reads to me like we'll look for, yeah, marginal underrated relievers and maybe a guy or two here or there who might have potential to start, but I just don't know how much they're just going to devote to who they have in house and go
Yeah,
from there.
they're trying to find the next Drew Smiley, which is not great.
Well, thankfully, they decided to just let Drew Smiley, go off into free agency. So they don't have to deal with that part anymore. I think so Rob Sestrisny is back in the organization for now. We'll see whether he gets like waived and claimed throughout the offseason, but that's the lefty. If you guys were gluttons for punishment, Mark Leiter Jr. has been non-tendered, so they could always bring him back as a lefty specialist. I feel like I would prefer not to do that because when he's off, he's like way off, and that's no fun for any of us. Yeah, so I guess they wouldn't need another lefty because the bullpen was super right-handed last year, and the one lefty that you kind of relied on, one of them broke. That was Luke Little, and the other one, Drew Smiley, not as reliable as you'd like. So I think generally, whoever they sign, you want them to be reliable, and that seems to be a little bit tougher these days because it just seems like even the most reliable of relievers had their bad moments, and some of that happened in the postseason as well.
What I wouldn't give to have a reliever break down in the postseason for the Cubs. That would be fantastic at this point.
That means they had made the postseason. So, we like that. Yeah, it's two separate games, right? Just get there first and then hope that you're healthy enough. And we did talk about the playoffs last time, and that's like basically most of the games being played turned into bullpen games at some point. So whoever has the most healthy arms who don't suck is most likely to triumph. So
Well, actually, that brings up a question. I've been in my own little world getting headlines here and there, and I saw something about some rumor about a handshake deal that the Dodgers had with yet another pitcher that everyone wants, but the vibe I got was that now nobody thinks they're really going to get them because it seems like the Dodgers already have it wrapped up. What am I missing? Fill in the blanks for me.
Rookie Sasaki, the Japanese guy who's being posted. Yeah, everyone assumes he's going to the Dodgers. I mean, it's pretty much like everyone's going to offer him their max international bonus pool money. So he basically just needs to pick which team he wants to take that contract from.
It is entirely possible that the Cubs can send him the hype video and use Seiya Suzuki and Shota Imanaga as ambassadors. And if for some reason he doesn't want to be a Padre, ask Yu Darvish to help out again. But like one of the things that I was thinking of, right, is that Yamamoto got hurt and a lot of Dodgers got hurt. Shohei Ohtani had gotten himself hurt as an Angel before he got to the Dodgers. He was still able to bat, obviously, and he won the MVP, which nobody was surprised about. I th guess the only surprise was that he won unanimously because Lindor had a great season, but 50-50 guy and basically justifying the stupid contract that he signed, even though he deferred like 90% of it. That probably earned something. And then but just all those arms on the Dodgers getting hurt, like every other week you hear another arm go down. Here's another Tommy John surgery. Here's another guy who's on the shelf. Yamamoto did come back and he pitched extremely well in the postseason, so that was really cool. Good for him. But I think he was one of the luckier ones. The other guys just, shoulder problems, elbow problems, torn ligaments, yada yada. It is not a good look if I'm up on the outside looking in. If I'm looking at that at the Dodgers, like I am very likely to get a lot of money, but I'm not going to be able to play for months on end, if not years, because I will break myself at some point.
Yeah, I that narrative, kind of hopeful, wishful thinking probably doesn't line up. Like maybe I'm missing what the new generation is like or what someone from another culture is like, but I think within athlete culture, I don't know a whole lot of guys are really thinking I will get hurt. I don't know that that ever really enters someone's mind as anything other than an intellectual aspiration that never really sinks in. That sense of infallibility, I'm a physical god. Nothing's ever going to happen to me. Other people get hurt because they are lesser humans, and I'm on another plane. I think that mentality is pretty common for athletes. Like they hear, yes, I know getting injured is part of the game, but it's not going to happen to me until it does. So that it would have an entirely different amount of leverage if it weren't for the World Series trophy they just won. But it was like, I think the stronger narrative that would be coming from LA would be as an organization, we are every bit as competitive as all the players that we recruit, and we intend to win all the time for the foreseeable future. Like that mentality. And whether that is the case, I don't know, but it's a lot easier to sell that when you look at up and down the roster are household names, and you know there's hardware in every single one of their trophy cases. And the Dodgers name, that brand, it has a lot of weight to it that I think everybody in this country and outside of it is recognizing they are becoming this generation's Yankees, in the sense that they're just that cutthroat, that determined to win, and that competitive. Everybody else can follow behind us and eat our dust. We're going for the championship year in and year out. And if you're coming from outside, it's really tough to see beyond that. So anything about, oh, but look at all the injuries. Yeah, maybe if that had stopped them, it would carry some weight, but I just don't think it does. I don't think it does anymore. If the Dodgers want somebody, the likelihood that they're going to get them just seems so ridiculously high at this point. And I'm wondering, I could be projecting some of my feelings about that onto what I'm interpreting from the Cubs, but it just seems like there's a different mentality for everybody who hasn't already shown themselves to be on that same level of competition. You know, like the Phillies have shown it, the Mets have shown it, the Braves to some extent have shown it, the Yankees have shown it. I don't know who else is really, you know, tripping over themselves to try to be that good. And the Cubs just they just aren't.
So financially, I don't think the Cubs can compete, and
They
it's very
could. I don't think the Cubs will compete. They
right
absolutely 100% could compete,
if they
but
wanted to.
they do not see the value in that yet.
So I think you made a lot of good points. It would be extremely surprising if he did not become a Dodger. But if he was a non-Dodger, I would be not be surprised at all if he ended up it being a Cub because of the Japanese guys who made a very successful transition thus far under this new front office, and the fact that they are able to develop pitching so well. So they very recently, I think you pro guys probably saw that on social media, they like partnered with a company that I think works very, they work very closely with a lot of Japanese pitchers, and then they also hired a guy who I believe works for a place called Tread. It's kind of like Driveline, but it's a different company. They basically work with pitchers to improve their arsenal and their conditioning. So those are two very big things. Like even if they don't land a Sasaki, whoever they do sign can develop and continue to condition well with the expertise that they've just accumulated along with everybody else who is already in the organization in the so-called pitch lab. So there's a good infrastructure in there if the athlete in question cares about such things. Although, it's kind of hard to. Like whatever he's getting paid will be enough to afford living in California. That's for sure, right? So that first of all, there's gonna be better weather, and even if the real estate is more expensive, which is part of the reason why I moved out of California, it's still like really beautiful, and there's a lot of things to do, and there's a lot of Asians who happen to be in Southern California, so it's a very good environment. And part of the reason why, I guess, Shohei decided to hop across town and Yamamoto came to the site. So there's a lot of advantages to being a Los Angeles Dodger. It's just like very hard to deny that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting too. I'm curious what you guys think. What are the Giants going to look like this offseason with Buster Posey running things now? I didn't dream that, right? Buster Posey runs the Giants now. Like he's
Yes.
their like head honcho GM person. Like how could that look? How is that going to affect the free agent market, trade market, all that? Like what are you guys expecting hearing about what the Giants, how they're going to attack this upcoming off season or
Don't know.
current
I'm
off season?
too, I think I'm too, prejudiced to believe that they're going to come in second on every major free agent just from his for history's sake, but maybe it'll be different with Buster, but somehow I don't think so.
So I'm trying to think of players that ended up being the heads of state in their respective baseball organizations, and the only name I can think of is Dave Stewart, and he didn't do so hot. So
Are we just throwing Sam Fold aside like he's
well,
chopped liver? Or...
he went to the business, right? Because he did the thing where he's like, hey, I'm gonna get my MBA, so I'm gonna take a sabbatical, and when I come back, I'm gonna become like the president of baseball business
he wants to
operations.
be he wants to be Crane Kenny.
Yeah, so
Huh.
Sam Fold is pretty good, but if you're talking about like a marquee player who became one, like the only
Oh,
other
marquee
player,
player.
the
Yeah,
play
Billy
only
Bean,
other,
obviously.
yeah. So
Well,
the
Derek Jeter, but maybe not for the same team though.
was he was an executive, but I don't think he ran as a GM type, right? He probably recruited things, players, but.
I thought it was more of a like Theo Epstein type role where he wasn't the GM,
Yeah.
but he was heavily involved.
I see. There is another player who became a GM. I think Ruben Amaro Jr. was a player. I don't know how good he was, but he definitely was a player, and the Phillies won when he was GM, and then he promptly got fired after that because the team went down the tubes in some su successive years. So it was pretty bad for him. But
And
for
if we're going strictly again off the marquee player headline, but you've got the White Sox with Kenny Williams. He was a player, and now I mean look at the empire that Chris Getz, former second baseman, has built with the White Sox. I mean they've got a hold on. Oh, sorry. I had the record upside down. It looked a lot more impressive
right.
for a second.
But one thing, like there is a chance that Buster Posey could be pretty good. Like he's a very beloved Giant. He was very successful in his career, you know. Like he obviously knows how to call a game. Can he build a team that can play the game well? That's a different story. And what the words that were coming out of his mouth and through the newspapers and everything is that he's trying to go more scouting. And if you look at
Okay.
the Cubs just like let go a lot of their pro scouts and they're going towards video and analytics. And I don't know if that's the best idea. I don't know if going full scout is the best idea. It's kind of like, you know, are you going to be careful like Jed, or are you going to go full DePoto or full Preller or full Dombrowski, right? In this case with Buster Posey, I think he's trying to get a more scouting thing, and some of the words that he says, like we on Obstructive View and another Cubs blog and whatever you guys called it before then, we used to talk about RSBI or R plus RBI or whatever. It sounded like he was talking about that. And you're just like, okay, those are context dependent statistics, but how good is the player outside of that context? So that's tr what analytics is trying to show you, right? And so I think he's doing. I think his heart's in the right place. I'm not entirely sure that the process is going to work. is a short story.
Okay. Well, I asked because I still feel like the Giants are one of those teams who could be willing to spend at any given point. Like, I think they have the capital to, if they decided to put the pedal to the metal and start spending, they could. But yeah, I had no idea what to really expect from Buster Posey as far as his mentality.
Well, now that the A's are in Sacramento and they don't have to worry about them anymore, they basically have the entire Bay Area market, right? And they definitely have money to spend. It's a beautiful ballpark. Fans love to go there. It's a nice place to live if you're, I guess, a tech bro and not, a normal peasant like me. But yeah, it's could potentially be an attractive destination. It's just that they are going to have to outbid the Dodgers and the Mets and the Yankees and possibly the Phillies and the Red Sox for, let's just throw it out there, a Juan Soto. There's very little chance that Juan Soto leaves New York. He's either going to be a Yankee or a Met. I think most of us believe that. At this point, it's just a matter of like whether the Steinbrenners can't outspend Steve Cohen.
I'm still holding, like, somebody online had said, like, when is the Cubs meeting with Juan Soto? And I said, when they play the Dodgers in Tokyo. Which is still, like, I saw a list of the five most likely to get Soto and the five, like, they have a shot to get Soto. So the top 10 possible landing spots for Soto and the Cubs were not on it. And it's just like, okay, Jed has shown in the past that he is capable of doing a sneak attack, guerrilla warfare signing that no one sees coming. But I think it would be beyond all imagination for the Cubs to even show up as a mystery team anywhere in the free agent process for Soto. It's just so odd. Like, man, to not even be in the discussion is pretty crazy.
I think they, I mean, they obviously speak to Sal Boris. It's a Boris client, right? Like Soto is. So it's like they probably already rang him up and said, "Hey, what's the deal? What's the number? Does he even want to come to Chicago?" He probably gave them that information, and at that point, they just decided, it's not worth it because we're just wasting our time. Like even if we offered, like $50 million more than Steve Cohen did, there's no way he's going to come to Chicago. And at that point, that number, whatever the Steve Cohen number is, and you're going $50 million on top of that, it's going from stupid to really stupid, right? And maybe sometimes you do need that really stupid money, but it's probably not the best use of resources, even though you're getting a generational talent. If that even makes sense. Like I just feel like, if it's not my money, I just want the guy on my team. But I know that the Cubs are not Steve Cohen rich. They're not as stupid rich, even though they have more money than I will ever see. So they have to have those considerations and they have to still do their sustainability thing.
Yeah, something tells me when you have someone who is just like where obscenely rich people think you are obscenely rich, when that person becomes a fan of their baseball team to the point that they just want to win a championship,
Right.
at some point there's just no stopping them from spending what they want to spend. Especially after having a taste of the postseason and seeing what the city's like, seeing what stadium is like when they're, experiencing these roller coaster games and comebacks and the celebrations. At some point, that's got to be so intoxicating that someone with where it would just be a major undertaking to try to get rid of half of your money. He's the guy. He's not gonna stop. Like you can't. He can't force Soto to be on his team, but I think it's going to get silly. I think it's going to get ludicrous.
I guess it kind of depends on whether it's more fun to be a Dominican in Queens or in the Bronx. So,
Oh,
like
my
he.
brother-in-law is a Dominican in the Bronx, and he seems to like it.
Okay.
But,
Yeah, I drove by New Yankee Stadium once about 15 years ago, and that's the only time I think I've ever been in the Bronx. Most of the time, because I'm a tourist, I just stick around in Manhattan, and I guess you would never find me on Staten Island, like ever. So, Manhattan it is. I'm trying to remember if I ever went to Brooklyn. Nothing's in Brooklyn now because all the MLB teams moved elsewhere. Yeah, he's gonna get his money. It's just a matter of where and. The 99.9% chance is that that money is coming from somewhere in New York.
is the concrete jungle where dreams are made of.
I still think Chicago's better, but I'm kind of biased.
Maybe that's just where dreams are made up.
That's here. It's so crazy to think it's been. I want to make sure I'm getting this right. From 2016 to 2024, that's 8 years. It's been 8 years, right? Like my
Yes.
math isn't that bad. That's still 8 years.
Yeah.
It which just seems like, I mean, I'm old, but that still seems like a super long time. And it feels like a lifetime ago that the Cubs were in the World Series. I mean, still wonderful, still great. But yeah, now I'm just that spoiled fan who thinks they should be competing every year.
Well, it is what we were promised when Theo took over, is that they would compete every year. And for a while they did, and then it just kind of went to hell. But it's building back up again. And I think they would do themselves and us as fans a disservice if they didn't continue to build up. Now, we did talk earlier that this team, as constructed, should be able to compete. And if, Milwaukee is losing Willy Adames and they aren't going to buy any other free agents and they're relying on, whatever they have in organization now, there's a chance if St. Louis is attempting to trade, certain folks and Wilson Contreras isn't going to be allowed to catch anymore and things like that. Like maybe there's an up and down there, right? So we don't know how they're gonna go, and then the Reds and the Pirates are just basically doing what they do. Although of course you have the Rookie of the Year in Paul Skenes, and they have really good pitching, and they basically will have that for about 3 more years before they decide, hey, these arbitration salaries are too big, and we're gonna trade them to the Yankees or something, right? So it's like. There's a chance for the Cubs to continue to compete with what they have now. They should definitely add to it. And not doing so will put Jed Hoyer on a very, very, very hot seat. And the moment the Cubs don't make the playoffs again after standing pat yet again, he is gone. Right? So there's a chance that. This particular team, every spring, we all say that, everybody has a 0-0 and 0 record. They have a shot, but you want to give yourself the best shot to be in the playoffs when the 162 is over. And I'm not sure they're going to do that if they just stand pat. I'm not saying that they'll have no shot because I actually am pretty confident about the talent on this team. I just think that they need more. And so the next time that we probably will talk together is after Thanksgiving when the winter meetings are taking place and, the Rule 5 draft and everything is being done. But given the new baseball economic environment and the part where something rhymes with schmollusion, I don't know if we'll actually see anybody but Juan Soto sign at the winter meetings because he is the first domino, and once that domino falls, then everything and it starts going. So we probably won't see the Cubs wheel and deal or sign anybody for quite a while. And that I know is frustrating, but that's kind of the reality of this current era of sports economics, especially for baseball.
Yeah, I don't even expect Soto to sign that early. I mean, it could happen, but if there is collusion, that would be a very non-collusive way to do business, is to allow someone to set the market for, because that they will immediately be doing the math of what a win is worth. How many wins Soto will be projected to be worth over the course of that career on a yearly basis, and they'll be figuring, okay, what are the platforms of salaries of where guys fit, and signing a giant contract at the beginning of free agency, that places an anchor. And that will be a part of every negotiation that every sports agent has with a team, is this is where the market is. This is what we're operating off of. Even though none of their clients are going to be comparable to Juan Soto, it's still going to be on a scale. And that would be something that, if it happens, it doesn't scream collusion. It screams, okay, here is a guy who was this aggressive at wanting to get a deal done, and we realized we had to compete for him, and we couldn't let, some of that petty game playing to take effect because it was too important that we get him on our team. And that it wouldn't surprise me if Boris played the game that way. If he saw things that way and said, I'm going to create a market for the rest of my free agents, because I do think he definitely thinks about that kind of thing, where playing his various clients off of each other in the grand scheme of the market and trying to make it work. He has not done a very good job over the last couple of seasons. Soto is his strongest, longest lever in that negotiating process, where I could very much see him going, like, my client is very eager to get a deal done. He's not wanting to spend Christmas not knowing where he's going to live. So let's make this happen. And that could really grease the skids for everybody else and change the way the game is played over the rest of this off season and in all the GM meetings. And that's the thing, when you have a generational player and you have a list of 10 teams who are going to be pretty eager to make something happen, they can get played off of each other if they want him that bad. And I have to believe they do want him that bad. So the leverage is very much in the hands of Boris and Soto in that regard. So yeah, that could make this a really interesting off season, from that vantage point of how everything else got broke. Because when did Ohtani end up actually announcing that he was signing a contract written in, like, Martian language?
Think it was mid-December. I almost certain it was
Yeah,
definitely
that sounds
before
right to that
Christmas.
sounds right to me too.
Yeah, like late enough in the game. I just remember it taking a long time, but yeah,
Yeah, it
that
was
I
December 9th.
I think he just
okay.
did it to mess with Toronto. But yeah,
Yeah, a little
the
decoy.
right. And he had to like make sure he found a way to throw Ipe under the bus for the thing that happened like a few months later. But anyway.
Man, I almost forgot about all that drama in the. Oh, what a crazy layer
Yeah.
of crap that laid on everything.
But you made a good point about like, you know, everybody wanting to sign at a specific time. If Soto can do it quickly, then every domino, subsequent domino, will fall a little earlier. And for the Cubs, it's particularly important because, again, they have to build their team a little earlier than everybody else. And that means they have to get their players ready before everybody else. And the last couple times, like, you know, Cody Bellinger hadn't signed early, and you know, he took a while to ramp up. And then like every time someone gets hurt or basically signs late and they can't ramp up with the team as easily, like there's some kind of weird onboarding snafu, right? And I think whatever happens, the Cubs should try to sign guys earlier, and if they can't, find a way to onboard them a little bit better, because I think the onboarding process is a little bit off. That's just been the excuse over the past few seasons, is like, oh yeah, he started late, he was hurt, blah blah blah, cold weather, etc. Everybody has to deal with that. Figure it out. And I
Yeah.
think with new coaches being hired and hopefully a new medical staff, they will try to find a way to figure it out, keep guys healthy, bring them back a little sooner, maybe use the injured list a little more intentionally to make sure that nobody is trying to play hurt and coming back before they should. But I don't know. I'm not a sports, I'm not that kind of doctor. Let's just go with that. So, but at some point, you have to kind of know when a guy is too hurt to play well and just let him take the 10 days.
Oh, yeah, not the Cubs' strength, or at least I wonder how much of it is the doctor and trainer's ability to assess that, and how much of it is a mindset thing that you can kind of coach into players of. Let us know what is going on here. Like, let's not hide stuff
Right.
just to keep yourself in the lineup every day. Yeah, because that's it's definitely somewhere some portion of it is in the player's court of being willing to say, yeah.
Right.
I'm hurt. This doesn't feel right. Yeah, and
Yeah.
I want to go back and say, I think it's completely untrue to think that if the Cubs don't make the playoffs, that Jed is out of a job. I don't believe that he's in that situation at all. I don't believe it for a second.
Okay.
I think he's running a team like he has a job. I think he has a similar job security to what Brian Cashman had in New York for so long, where it's like I believe he is employed with being given a lot of credit for the Cubs having won the World Series and been in so many LCSs, and you know,
Now
I think
developing
that
a
is.
good farm, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they are looking at it in more of a big picture sense of we like where the Cubs system is right now, and as disappointed as they are in not making the playoffs, I still think that the Ricketts are happy with the entire mechanism, and I think they're probably pretty happy that he's not banging down their door asking for another 100 million every season.
Right.
And so I think they probably have a pretty good relationship. Obviously, I could be proved wrong. I hope it is rendered moot and that they make the playoffs in 2025. But I do not get that vibe of, yeah, like I don't know what his contract status is, but I don't get the sense of like, yeah, we'll renegotiate things when we see some results in October and hopefully November. Like, I think his job is pretty secure, and that he is managing in that way. And I think that is the best atmosphere you can create in your front office, is for it to be secure. Because when a GM has to win now, you are going to see a lot of future seasons get sacrificed when you have a GM who needs the championship or the playoff appearance to be immediate. They are going to start to make decisions with prospects that do not make sense for the organization as a whole if he's strictly coaching for his job. That's the impression I get.
Yeah, I don't
And I
think
don't
he's
think it's
going to.
necessarily a bad thing.
No, he. I feel like he himself on radio bits has said that he's not doing this to keep his job. He's doing this for the sake of the organization, and I think that's admirable. So I feel like he's going to do exactly what you said. He's going to do what's best for the organization. I think we probably disagree on what's best for the organization with Jed, but he's also a lot smarter than we are, right? I think at some point it has to work. Like, you can have the best prospects and best farm and blah 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 blah. They have to turn into MLB talent that turns into MLB wins. So, given the tenor of the last after season letter from Tom Ricketts, your mileage may vary again, but it sounds like he's very disappointed that they didn't make the playoffs. So that's why I think, like, it's a lot harder for Jed Hoyer to keep his job if the Cubs in 2025 do not make the playoffs. And if he does not do the moves that get them a little closer to that reality, it's very unlikely, in my opinion, that he keeps his job. Now, the cool thing is just the army of prospects that are nearly MLB ready on the top 100 list. Prospect list who are just in Iowa, right? And that includes Matt Shaw, who's going to get more play in Iowa. The pitching has been great. The offense, again, can score runs. So he's not too far away from building that playoff team. He just has to do something. And so, again, winter meetings are coming up after Thanksgiving. We'll see what they do then, because at that point, I think a lot of teams will have at least laid the groundwork for all these trades that will eventually blow our minds somewhere in, I guess, January or so. And if nothing else, like the Bears, I've been watching them now that I
No.
actually have cable. They've been losing, but it's been actually very entertaining losses over the past couple of weeks. The quarterback's been pretty impressive, and I think it's the perfect storm of just, hey, the quarterback's doing well, we see some talent, and the coach is going to get fired. So,
I think one of us is
when
more entertained by all this than the rest of us. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not actually a Bears fan. I just like watching, entertaining sports, and I've been entertained lately, possibly because of how dumb some of these losses have been, but also because I've liked the talent that I've seen from a certain top pick.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, thanks again, guys, for doing this with me, and of course to Adam for hosting this, even though I'm recording to my own computer. Thanks to Rich Deanna for the theme song and Randall Sanders for doing the final out call from the 2016 World Series. You can find us on obstructedview.net, and I hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your loved ones. Yeah, sticking around in Chicago. But we will have turkey. It will be awesome.
Having a mini Thanksgiving here and then going to Hawaii,
Oh
which will
my
be
gosh.
fun. Yeah,
What? Wow. I might be going to Indianapolis. I'm not sure.
that is definitely not Hawaii.
It
Well,
depends on someone's colon, and that's all I'm going to get in. That's as far as
you
into as I'm going to get.
they do have waffle houses in Indianapolis. That's cool. I can't wait for them to finally make it somewhere where I live, so I don't have to drive like 200 miles to get to a Waffle House.
Worth it.
Yep. Yeah, so thanks, guys. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours, and thanks for listening.
Yep, go Cubs.
It was more than just a game.